Football is back, and so is the Ringer NFL show. Coming at you 5 days a week with wall-to-wall coverage from recapping the Sunday games, giving a player perspective, deep dives, and previewing the coming slate. Check out the Ringer NFL show on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast and Ringer SC. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm right, thanks, man. How are you?
Very well, indeed, indeed.
Got to see your wonderful face yesterday.
Oh my gosh.
In person.
My sympathies.
Not behind the computer screen. We went for a coffee with Jonathan Liu.
Did indeed, yeah.
The master of nuance.
Indeed. 100% pure nuance.
He was on good form as well.
Very good form, yeah. A great man.
Yeah, man.
He always seems to have grown another couple of inches each time I see him.
Jonathan Liu has magnificent hair, by the way.
He does. He does best hair in the game. Not that
he's going to be listening to this, so that's embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah. What a great man. What a great writer.
Oh, great, one of the
best. A great human. Yeah, one of the best.
Do you know what it is today?
What is it?
It's the 150th episode of Stadio on the Ringer.
150?
150 Stadios on the Ringer.
A lot of talking and even more editing.
Oh. Yeah, I know, but it's not really that much if you think about it.
I suppose so.
It's
well,
not
thanks.
That much.
Thanks to everyone for listening.
Yeah, thanks.
I really appreciate it.
All right, let's do some admin super quick. So we hope everyone's staying safe and well, getting vaccinated if you can, getting that booster if you can. Stadio newsletter went out on Wednesday, first one of the year. Thanks to everyone who signed up. You can sign up by going to stadio.football, scroll to the bottom, pop in your email address. You'll get a confirmation email. Check your spam folder. You get a newsletter every Wednesday from us. Some bits and bobs. Wright's House went up on Wednesday morning. You were on Wright's House with Mayowa, and honestly, man, I think it was one of the best Wright's House episodes there's been. A very wide-ranging, flowing talk that went through family and grief and DiMaggio's debut. It's obviously his grandson,
yeah.
Wright's grandson. The FA Cup, AFCON, flowers for Jeanette.
Doing great things.
It was just a lovely episode, man. Well done. You all did really well, I think.
No, thanks so much. So yeah, real pleasure.
On that note, someone tweeted at us, Charlie Wills. He said, kind of upset you didn't mention Boreham Wood beating Wimbledon in the FA Cup. Disclaimer, they did, Charlie.
Yeah, they did a big thing on it, actually.
They actually did. They did a minute or so wrapped up in the draw. There was a slight problem with the draw audio, which meant that the draw audio had to come out, which then made it kind of sound like, oh, Boreham Wood, boom, out again. So we had to chop it for flow of the podcast. But so let's do it now. Because Boreham Wood was one of the main stories from the FA Cup, I think, in terms of the really, really impressive results. National League, beating Wimbledon, AFC Wimbledon. And they're through, they've got a draw against Bournemouth, right?
The clean sheet too, yeah. Beat Wimbledon, the clean sheet.
So just to put it down, there was chat. And actually, let's let people behind the curtain. Sometimes this does happen on Stadio and on Wright's House where stuff gets bigged up, but maybe it has to come out because of timing or flow, or sometimes because we all record remotely, it can happen where sometimes someone's connection's a little bit sketchy. You get a load of this is a technical term, you get a load of digital artifacts on the audio.
Oh God.
And thus it must be removed for quality control. So anyway, Charlie, just so you know, there was some love for Boreham Wood.
There was plenty actually. Yeah. We even speculated about how big the receipts might be, the gate receipts might be.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so apologies that didn't make it in, but that was just an audio issue. Any other admin?
No, that's it for now.
All right, then. So today, we're going to quickly wrap up a few games that we caught this week, and then we're going to do a proper mailbag. So let's get into it after this.
Let's do it.
Should we quickly start with El Clasico? Real Madrid 3, Barcelona 2, after extra time, in the semi-final of the Spanish Supercopa, which is kind of one of the reasons why I don't want to spend too much time on this, because I really, really, really don't like the expanded Supercopa in Spain.
No, I don't like it either.
For those who are unaware, a couple of years ago, they started to expand it into four teams. So finalists of the Copa del Rey and the top two in the league. It's just so that they can try and get more Clásicos in, I think.
It's a pointless tournament. Having said that, last night's game, I think, was quite interesting in terms of Barcelona's direction of travel.
It's a game that I wouldn't have really wanted to cover anyway, but it was actually probably the best Clásico for a while.
Yeah, it was. And all the sort of main characters showed up really quite impressively.
Yeah.
So, yeah, shout out to Real Madrid for that win, but also to Ansu Fati, who returned and scored. And should have scored a bicycle kick, actually. Shout out to Pedri, who came on and immediately just ran the show. Like within 3 minutes of arriving, it was like, oh my goodness, Pedri's in the house.
Really interesting that how with the emergence of Gavi this season and Pedri's absence, I don't think people have forgotten how good Pedri is, but I think people have forgotten how good Pedri is. Does that make sense?
They've forgotten how good Pedri is. They have. I think not Barcelona watchers, obviously, but Pedri is extraordinary. Gavi was just an astonishing bonus. The fact that they have, and I'll say it 1,000 times in this podcast, the fact that they have Pedri, Gavi, and Ansu Fati is frankly astonishing, because any one of those players, you could build a team around. But all three, mm-hmm. and the way they combine, like they complement each other. This was a superb game. We won't say too much on it because the highlights are on YouTube. But I did have the privilege of watching this the whole way through and watching it develop as it did. And like I say, everyone showed up. The Vinicius-Benzema combination is a gem. I think they've got 30 so between good. Them this season.
So good.
Which is remarkable. You've got Valverde with the late winner. If you look at the dummy for the goal as well by Valverde, it's just a little joy as well. Elements of Rivaldo, World Cup 2002.
Is we had a question about that.
Oh, right. Oh.
Dirk for three. Great Twitter handle. I've long been fascinated by Rivaldo's dummy in the World Cup final when he leaves it for Ronaldo. To me, it's the most interesting skill to see on a football pitch, like watching the toughest guy in the room walk away from a fight because he has nothing to prove. Incredible energy. Very unselfish in the right setting.
You know who is an absolute master of the dummy, actually? It's one that's not often seen in the edge of the box. It was Xavi and Paul Scholes were absolute masters, and Fabregas too, at letting the ball run across them, specifically over long distances. So when you'd hammer the ball, often you see it with goalkeepers hammering the ball out, and Scholes and Xavi would just let it run across them and would change the entire flow of the play. Actually, to be honest, Pedri too. Pedri's another one that's great at that. The reason I love to mention the Rivaldo dummy is because I personally believe that Rivaldo is the player of the 2002 World Cup. And every single intervention he made in that tournament was decisive. And it was so fitting that he should make that dummy for the kind of decisive goal, I thought. Because he also hit the strike that Oliver Kahn parried for Ronaldo's first. So if you look at that entire tournament, at each major moment, even in the semi-final against Turkey, I think when Ronaldo scores for the 1-0, I think Rivaldo has like two or three shots on target that test Rustu before that even comes in. So it's like, he was priming the Brazil attack in each case. So I just love that he gets the dummy because, like, in that tournament, it's like he was the strongest.
Mm.
He was the strongest guy walking away from the ball or the fight. So yeah, lovely question. Thank you.
But yeah, so Real Madrid through to the final of the Spanish Supercopa in Saudi Arabia. We're recording this ahead of Athletic Club against Atleti Thursday night.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't like the expanded Supercopa.
I don't like it at all.
Staying with Spanish football, there was a full round of the women's Primera this week. Big wins for Atleti and Barcelona. Quick question to you, Mr. Okwonga.
Yep,
off the top of your head, no Googling. 17 games played in the Primera.
98.
What was the question?
How many goals have they scored?
Actually, no. The question was, what was the goal diff? What is their goal difference? What is Barcelona's goal difference?
95.
Ooh, so close. 94.
not bad. I'll take that.
Do you know what? I hate how close he got to that. I can't even say we got him. Very impressive, Moussa Konga. Very impressive. Let's go to England, where Chelsea beat Spurs 1-0 to go through to the Carabao Cup final, 3-0 on aggregate. Do you know what I want to do here? I want to praise Andre Mariner's use of VAR. Because honestly, after the discussions that we've had over the last few weeks, couple of months, maybe however long, this was an absolutely perfect demonstration of how to use VAR.
Right.
Three really contentious decisions. Andre Mariner made the wrong call twice. consulted the monitor, looked at it properly, came to the right decision. No one is complaining about the use of VAR. And the third one was the offside for Harry Kane, which was correct, but obviously that's not his call. Perfect.
I mean, that's
human
that's
being,
all you want.
Making an error, yeah. Using the technology to correct the error, which is why it was brought in the first place. Everyone's happy. If you're going to have VAR, this is how you use it.
Yeah. No, that's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. And I think
I just wanted to flag that because refs get a load of shit about not using it properly. And I thought, actually, here we go. We have to kind of highlight it because we are going to talk about a referee in a little bit.
We are.
Moussa Okwonga was a referee.
Main character energy.
He might have the similar main character energy. Thomas Tuchel has progressed to every single final in every single cup competition since taking over as Chelsea manager, which is rather impressive. And Arsenal against Liverpool is Thursday night. The first leg, obviously, because that was postponed. West Ham beating Norwich in the Premier League and Southampton with a really good win over Brentford on Tuesday night. That's a really impressive win, 4-1 against Brentford.
Strange lack of intensity. Yeah, what's going on? I mean, I should give credit to Southampton first and foremost because that's just a really impressive result. It's the first time that Brentford maybe have really been handled like that.
Mm. I mean, Southampton are up to 11th now. So, new takeover.
Good times for them.
Yeah, I'm really pleased for them, actually. I'm just glad they've got a bit of breathing room over the bottom three. But the biggest game this week was Iceland against Okwonga's beloved Uganda in a friendly.
Even I didn't catch this.
A 1-1 draw in a friendly between Iceland and Uganda. I can't believe Moussa didn't even watch his beloved Uganda.
Listen.
Let's talk about the Italian Super Cup.
Yes. That feels quite significant, I think.
Inter winning it in the last minute of extra time, pretty much the last kick of the game from Alexis Sanchez. Sanchez assisted in inverted commas from Matteo Darmian. Alexandro kind of tried to chest the ball to Chiellini, I think. Darmian nicked in on the volley.
Almost like he didn't
Chiellini
see. He
cleaned
see
him out. And then Sanchez put it home after... I thought this was quite a good game.
Yeah.
It was a fun game.
Because Juve showing signs of life as well. So Inter really wanting to kind of check that charge. I mean, Juve are too far back to threaten Inter. But in terms of Inter's momentum, it felt important. And you can always tell from the celebrations. You know, it's not like, you know, when PSG won the League Cup and it was like, they don't seem to be enjoying this. They're not really enjoying this. You can't trust, you know, on a scale of PSG celebrating a trophy to Atleti celebrating that Liga where I was actually almost terrified because of the intensity of the celebration. This was pretty much up there. This meant a lot to Inter. Inter put together a really strong bit of form. It's the old cliche about how a team really sometimes needs a trophy to bond. And I think with Simone Inzaghi coming in and Conte going out in the summer, and actually in many respects, like a lot of new pieces coming into that Inter team, this is very much Simone Inzaghi's team now. And this kind of solidifies that, cements that. Great win for them.
Quick shout for Weston McKennie, who got the opener with a header. And it's actually been playing pretty well for Juve after a tricky patch of form. And he obviously had some disciplinary issues as well. So good to see him hitting some form.
Very much so, yeah.
Lautaro Martinez got the equaliser with a penalty and then came off for Alexis Sanchez, who, like we said, got the winner in stoppage time and the end of extra time and got booked for taking his shirt off. Quick question. How old is Matteo Darmian?
29.
Matteo Darmian is an absolutely perfect example of Walcott's law. He's 32.
32. My goodness. Why did I think he was younger than he was? Because he's been around for ages. But he's the kind of player that's been around for ages who seems like he's always younger. So for example,
I think Sanford United are 26.
I thought that Asensio was 28. He's actually 26. I thought Asensio was 28. Because Asensio is someone who's simultaneously been around for ages, but also still young. And Darmian feels that to me as well. Does that make sense?
Paulo Dybala will always be 22 to me, but he's actually 28.
Like, I can't tell you how old Belotti is. I can't tell you how old Belotti is.
Oh, that's a good shout.
Exactly. There are some players where they're simultaneously like prospects and also like no longer prospects.
That's it. For those who don't know about Walcott's law, it was something that we started very early in Stadio, pre-ringer, where a player is a prospect, prospect, a prospect, a prospect, and all of a sudden they're 30.
Right. That's absolutely, Walcott's law. Walcott's law. Adam Yen is like a classic example.
Yeah,
someone
he's actually 41. any other games you want to shout out, or should we get into the mailbag and we can touch on some AFCON stuff there?
Let's get into the mailbag.
All right, man. Let's talk about, let's just do it, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Alex Brotherton. Shouts to Alex Brotherton. The referee in Tunisia versus Mali, has he invented existential refereeing? So for those who missed this game, probably the biggest shame about this game was that the referee drama overshadowed what I thought was actually a really good game of football.
Yes.
Very entertaining game of football and quite an important game for that group, actually. So Tunisia 0, Mali 1. Mali took the lead thanks to Ibrahim Okone penalty just after half time for handball. And Tunisia also got a penalty with a handball on, it was on Gineppo, wasn't it? And Wahbi Khazri had his penalty saved.
Bit high, that penalty, but still a great save.
Yeah, saved by Munkuru, who I thought was brilliant, actually, in the whole game. The thing I love about this Mali team is that they've kind of been tipped a little bit for dark horses, as the dark horse. And they're actually a really, really good football side. So that midfield pairing of Amadou Hadara and Diadi Samaseku obviously is a legit midfield pairing, two good Bundesliga players. And to show how good they are, you know, Yves Bissouma was on the bench.
Right.
So yeah, basically, this isn't a Mickey Mouse team at all. And to be honest, I don't really think Tunisia are either.
Well, let's be real. Actually, let's talk about goal margins. In this entire tournament, we haven't yet seen a winning margin of more than a single goal.
Yeah.
And a lot of the winning margins have been penalties alone. It's the defensive systems. It's the level of sophistication and defense. I compared it to World Cup, so Italia 90. Do you remember how, like, all of a sudden, like, and don't forget, like, just a couple of years before Italia 90, countries with, like, huge populations in Europe were getting blown away. Like, only a few years before Italia 90, like, teams like Turkey being beaten 8-0 in World Cup qualifiers, and then you get to Italia 90 and all of a sudden, people are shutting up shop.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Sebastian Haller, for a prime example. Yeah. This is a guy who's broken Champions League records for goal scoring, and he doesn't even register a shot against Equatorial Guinea.
Because the gaps just close. They defend in waves. You know, actually, the way that Equatorial Guinea were defending actually reminded me of, I mean, apologies to people that don't watch any rugby at all on this podcast, but the drift defense, the way that the defense is staggered. So when you're attacking it, you're not attacking it as a flat thing. You're attacking it in lines. It's like you've got to cut through successive lines to get to the goal. And Haller was being swarmed and his space was being closed off in quite a sophisticated way. And he actually, funnily enough, encountered some of the problems he encountered at West Ham, weirdly enough, in terms of the isolation that he was feeling up front. But this is something that Mo Salah saw as well. This is cutting across games and groups.
Can I cut in really quickly? Because we did have a question from Coco Shanto who said, why has AFCON been so low scoring so far? So I just wanted to throw that in there because we started to talk about it.
But I think it's a combination of factors. I think... okay, the three things I've noticed. There is a sophistication of defensive systems, absolutely. There is some of the decision-making, as Carl Anker's pointed out, in the final third has not been optimal. And I think that, but then again, that's something, there's a related point there because I think there's a failure or the desire not to overcommit. These are all the first matches, right? So overcommitting an attack, when you know that when you're a big team, a team that's fancy to win the tournament, and you overcommit in attack, you know you're opening yourself to the counter because a lot of these teams defending really, really well, deep and narrow, are banking on the counter. So I've only seen as a few very good counters. I think Gabon got a great one for their goal. But there haven't been that many good teams on the break. So I think that compression you're seeing as a result of that. And this is the thing, like, you know, big tournaments, how often we said, Ryan, like, don't lose the first game. You lose the first game, you're in so much trouble.
I think this is it. I think because there are so, I think a lot of the teams are quite finely balanced across the whole tournament. And I think that because there are only, what, four places for third place.
Right.
So that means that the slightest margins, it could go down to single goals. I think there's an element of conservatism slightly, but also I don't think it's been that conservative. I think the games have been super fun so far.
Right, yeah.
So I just think that, yeah, I think people are a little bit wary this stage because, like you say, losing that first game could be, you could be out before you know it.
Well, the thing is, you look at Algeria, for example, they're a good example. Algeria, following a superb performance by Kamara in goal for Sierra Leone, they drew their first match against Sierra Leone, right? And now that group, Algeria have got Ivory Coast, Sierra Leone, Equatorial Guinea. That's not an easy group to navigate, actually. That's not a pleasant group for, you know, Algeria, like as the, obviously as the holders of this trophy, you're coming out of that being like, ah. And the way that Sierra Leone celebrated was really striking, I thought.
Mm.
They knew what they pulled off. They were like, that was not necessarily a point they were expecting to come away with. Well, so not expecting. They're very much hoping, I'm sure, and maybe thought they could pull something off or achieve something. But there have already been, in the course of this tournament, some really impressive tactical displays, even in defeat, actually, right? Like, even some of these teams that have lost by a single goal, you've looked at that and gone, ah, like, you've got the chops to go further in this tournament. Yeah, really finely balanced stuff, actually. So I'd encourage anyone who hasn't had a chance to check out a game, get on it. And something that was noted in the WhatsApp group the other day in terms of the depth of these teams, widely remarked in the WhatsApp group how Wilfried Zaha started on the bench for Ivory Coast.
Mm.
As some, I thought that was strange, but that's the role that Mats Gradel plays, Mats Gradel being one of the coolest names. I mean, Mats Gradel is basically the African version of Jason Statham in terms of a coolness of name. Such an action hero name.
Is Jason Statham that cool?
Yeah, it is very cool. It is very cool.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's cool. Jason Statham, that's pretty damn cool.
Anyway, let's talk about the refereeing. What the hell happened, Musa?
We've seen refs blow up early. Someone actually pointed this out. This has happened a few months ago, actually, in a game. Was it in Serie A? Somewhere in Europe?
Mm.
Refs blowing up early. I don't know. There were conflicting reports about why he had done that. And Tunisia weren't happy about it. I think we were actually in a press conference by the time... There was a press conference taking place by the time they decided to replay it, which is pretty wild. And it was... Then the reason why, of course, it's so contentious is that the game was... If it had been 4 or 5 nil, it might have been okay, right? But it was, you know, it was 1-0. And there was a lot that was contested in this match. Extremely close, first game of a tournament. So really not the ideal time to be blowing up in advance at full time. And I'll be honest, I'll be like 99% of people watching this game who were like, I don't know what's going on there. I don't know what's going on.
You can tell I was a neutral because when he blew up at 85 minutes or whatever it was, I legitimately like started to properly laugh. Like, what the fuck? What the fuck is going on? Like, and then just the way, the calmness at which, but all, do you know what, right? When the camera was panned out for the wide shot, it was very much like watching a FIFA 95 referee run around. Just everything was quite erratic. Like even going when he did the VAR check and he ran past the monitor and then had to double back, it was like it was like he was on a grid. It was really strange.
Do you know what's so funny about you mentioning that very quickly? When I watched the Italian Super Cup and Lautaro Martinez scored his penalty, he celebrated like his body movements were as jerky as a computer animation. I'm like, so maybe we're in a simulation this week, I don't know. But back to the refereeing, there was talk about him being affected by the sun or something. I don't know if you saw that. Did you see that?
No.
There was a conversation about being affected by sunstroke. I think Tommy over at Deutsche Welle mentioned this. Let me just quickly bring it up. It was a quite interesting point that he brought up. Okay. Yes. So Essam Abdel Fattah, the head of the AFCON referees, has revealed that Gianni Sikazwe suffered from sunstroke during the Tunisia-Mali game, which caused him to lose his concentration yesterday. That's been flagged up or shared by Tommy Oladipo, a news anchor at Deutsche Welle News.
Wow.
That's interesting. Now, there, as Tommy points out, they could have replaced the referee with another official. And it could have been, like, this is the thing about, I haven't mentioned before, the conditions, right? So there are a couple of issues. There is variable pitch quality. There is variable pitch quality. So the ball is holding up and skipping on some of the surfaces and isn't in relation to others, which makes defending easier, makes obviously complex attacking systems harder to execute. No question about that. And that has been a bit of a leveler. The other leveler is the weather, right? Now in the evening, obviously a bit more straightforward. You've got like early 20s, bit of humidity, but still fine. But this was a daytime game. And some of the daytime games, I've got to say, I've been wondering how the intensity of the game has been affected by the heat and the humidity and the water breaks and so on. So that's the thing that's come out, which maybe puts some of this in context. I don't know, but it's an interesting detail. We'll see what comes of it. We'll see whether a kind of official report is filed on this in the next day.
I mean, yeah. I mean, if that is the case and there was literally a health issue there, then that is quite wild because, I mean, what was it? 31 degrees, did you say? I think it was.
I don't know how hot it was. I didn't say, but
it was about 31 degrees, but it was midday sun kind of thing. It was like, what, 1 p.m. kickoff local time, I think, 2 p.m.?
Absolutely.
So it was very, very hot.
Yeah.
And very exposed. And I mean, it's such a glaring error that something like that wouldn't surprise me.
Mm.
I think there might be a potential for this game to be replayed. Although, the only thing that makes me think it might not happen is because Tunisia didn't come back out. So they tried to replay the rest of the game, but the Tunisian players were already in ice baths. So they did. Do you remember when, was it Nice Marseille?
Yes.
Got stopped because Paye got hit with that bottle and then they came out and they started it and there was no one there. And then they just, because Marseille didn't come back out and then they just blew it for full time. It was basically that, but for a different reason. So I think the only thing that might, if it gets like tricky with legal stuff, because Tunisia didn't return to the field of play, they might use that as a thing to say, well, you can't replay the game.
I mean, I've got sympathy for Tunisia, but look, no matter how frustrated you are, it always makes sense just to sort of do the admin of coming back out again. It just saves you trouble down the line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we do some transfer stuff?
Let's do it.
Because this is fun. Okay. I'm going to start off with Christopher Sibbins. One transfer you'd like to see in January, please. Let's do one each.
That was going to be really, really boring. I did see the link between Dennis Zakaria and Manchester United.
Again?
And I want to see it again. Yeah, yeah, again. But now it's pinning up a lot of steam. I would like to see that in January sooner rather than later because I'd like to see him. Like, it's very, very difficult to play those two in midfield. But if anyone's got the mobility, there's very few players in world football who've got the mobility to help that work. But I think Dennis Zakaria is one of the people that could actually make that work.
So I'd like to see that. Leave the Bundesliga boys alone.
You just asked what I'd like to see. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I'm editing that out.
Okay, then Jude Bellingham to Manchester United. There you go.
Okay, I'm editing that out as well. I think that's very nice transfers if you're a Manchester United fan. I'm going for an Arsenal one. It's Frankie de Jong to Arsenal because I made a bit of a joke about this quite a while ago, thinking it was a pipe dream. I think he's gettable now.
I don't think it's going to happen from Barcelona. I think Barcelona have managed that transition from Busquets all wrong. They've got it all wrong. It's really sad. They've got it all wrong.
You don't think it's going to happen for Frankie at Barcelona?
No, I don't. I think they've got it all wrong, the transition. It really worries me because I know why they signed him. He's absolutely amazing. Brilliant deep line player, but the way that he plays defense midfield is such a different configuration to the way that Busquets plays it. Busquets is about, it's a strange combination of like deliberation, but also one touch. Actually, it's funny because Busquets seems more deliberate but actually he moves the ball on maybe slightly quicker than De Jong, but De Jong builds it differently, right? It's a different kind of swell. Nothing wrong or right about it, just a different style. But for all this time, De Jong has had to play either as like a double pivot or as an eight. And he's had to play out of sorts, out of position within the team that doesn't really suit his strengths. And in that time, he's been bypassed as an eight by players for whom an eight is a more natural position. And Busquets is still playing brilliantly. He's still brilliant. I don't know if it happens with Barcelona.
I think if Arsenal dangled some serious money at them, and by serious, I mean like 50 million euros, I think they'd sell. Okay, Holly Baleen, do you think that Felipe Coutinho going to Villa on loan will benefit both parties?
Oh yes, I love it. What's not to like? Steven Gerrard gets more creativity, building on that firm defensive base he's built there. I love the move for Coutinho because he's reuniting with someone who greatly admires him. I love the move for him as well because it just takes away the scrutiny of being at Barcelona, being such an expensive signing for them, and it's a fresh start. And allows Barcelona's forward players to express themselves a little bit more. Ansu Fati just came back and is looking, well, he's the boy king of Barcelona.
The chosen one.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. Like, Ansu Fati is the get out of jail card that Barcelona have been missing. That's how good he is. He's simply the, I think he's still underrated. They were talking in the commentary about, Leo Messi, he's gone. You only get one of those every generation. Well, you only get one Ansu Fati every generation. You really do. Like, this player is genuinely fearless. You know, I'd like to think, as an urban myth, the first time he got the number 10 shirt, he probably just giggled, like, oh, wow, look at this. I'm wearing a number 10 shirt. Like, Ansu Fati putting on the number 10 shirt is like someone lifting up, was it Mjolnir, that hammer, like Thor's hammer? It's like that. There are some footballers that couldn't even pick that up in the dressing room, I'm pretty sure. And it's just like,
can you imagine, like, 10? Actually, when they're looking around and the number 10 shirt's up for grabs, Martin Brathwaite's like, I'll have it. It doesn't happen. Someone else is just like Aguero maybe or someone, I don't know, just like, I'll have it. And it's just not happening.
Exactly.
It has to come to you. And all of a sudden the shirt just starts to wobble on the floor and everyone's just like, what the fuck is happening? And it just flies past everyone in the dressing room and just hits Ansu Fati on the head. So it's just like, poof, covered Ansu Fati's head. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, this video has been posted online and there's just a reaction of a load of people in a theater watching it being like, oh shit. Oh, my God. Oh, God. And Ansu's just like, he's got the shirt over his face.
Barca. Vamos.
And that's the cut. There you go. Some Barcelona fan fiction for you, everyone.
I love that so much. Marvel Studios crossover. We love to see it.
Listen, Marvel, give us our own What If animation series.
Should, yes, you should.
Football is superheroes. All right, let's do some more January transfer questions.
Let's do it.
Barry Brudney says, people often downplay January transfers given limited time to mesh with the squad. Who is the best January transfer that both of you can remember?
Did Edgar Davids join Barcelona in the mid-season?
Yeah, he went on loan in January.
That's the one. That is the all-time great January move. Is that 04, 05?
03, 04.
03, 04, 03, 04, yeah. That's the one. Edgar Davids in January, like, he really galvanized them because they were like struggling until he got there and they went on a run after that. So that would be the one, I think.
Interesting. I'd go for Jose Antonio Reyes. That was the Invincibles season.
That's the only time I've seen, yeah. So I've mentioned that 1,000 times. The only time that Henry ever looked concerned.
He really, really kick-started Arsenal again. He gave Arsenal a big impetus in that
incredible
season.
Incredible footballer.
Massively overlooked part of the Invincibles squad because he only came in that second half of the season, but he was integral to that side.
If he'd had a settled team for the sustained part of his career, like his absolute peak, because he won a lot after his peak, but if he'd had a sustained starting spot in a settled team at his peak, I think he would have put a couple of records out of sight. But he was that incredible stat I always talk about with Reyes is that I think for 2 months after he left the Spanish league, he was still the most fouled player in the league. But he was absolutely, I remember just hearing about him and, you know, this guy with this unbelievable dribbling style and he was beating players just, you know, for fun. And you hear these stories. And then I saw him and I thought, my God, it was the directness of it. The way he just cut to space, the way that he was fearless and he finished. He was a winger that finished, actually in many ways, a kind of forerunner of the kind of wide forwards we see now, like a winger who finished with the absolute certainty of a number 9.
One more transfer question. Ollie Glanville says, on Adama Traore, pick a team, any team, if he is to leave Wolves. I saw this earlier and thought,
oh my goodness, exactly
where I want him to go.
Can I be honest with you?
Go on.
Real Madrid, actually.
Sorry, what?
Real Madrid. Adama Traore to Real Madrid. Do you know why? Sorry. Because what, as a transfer move?
Yeah.
Yeah, Real Madrid. Do you know why I say this? Because I mentioned this specifically because I saw Barcelona on Twitter saying how Mbappe, Haaland, Vinicius might not work well as a front three in terms of like in defense. But Adama Traore's defensive work is really strong in the right system. Plus, Real Madrid is the kind of front line where they kind of let you get on with it, right? They are relying on people to just initiate and just force the pace. So his the things that his strengths are best, like just taking men on fearlessly, whatever, I think that he'd combine really well with Benzema and Vinicius. I think he'd be an absolute nightmare because I think they're unselfish enough, they'd all supply each other. So I think that Adama Traoré at Real Madrid, especially overlapping with someone like Alaba, would be terrifying. I'd love to see him at Real. There's a hot take for you.
That's really interesting.
Do you know what I mean? As a fit, as a specific fit with Real Madrid, given that they just, because if you think of the front, Adama Traoré and what he represents, right? He's basically kind of like a DIY forward where you're like, you know what, Adama, I'm Ancelotti. I don't really care how it looks. Just get the job done. Just work it out. Work out the chemistry. Not that he doesn't, not he's not a vibes coach, but he really does give, he defers a lot to his attackers, which is why playmakers have such a good time under Ancelotti. It's why you saw the best form from James Rodriguez under him, because he gives you so much freedom. And if you gave Adama Traoré freedom in an elite team that was possession heavy, I think he would absolutely thrive. He'd go to a new level. He hasn't really had that, I think, at his in his pomp. He's been in like counterattacking teams, teams that play on the break. He's like, oh, like he's off doing his dribbling thing, but he's not often given what we might call air support. At Real, he gets that. And I think he thrives.
See, my shout was going to be Roma.
Listen, here's the thing. Any attacking player that wants a bit of freedom will do well at Roma. Great shout. Also, Atalanta too. Atalanta too. He'd be brilliant, Atalanta, I think.
I don't know. I think stylistically it fits a little bit more at Roma, because I think Atalanta are a little bit too fluid.
Oh, and he's quite possession heavy, you think, as opposed to...
Yeah, that he has a skill set that you have to maximise in order to get the maximum out of him.
Yeah.
He's not a plug and play player.
No. He's like, here's the final third. Here's what the other two are already doing. And here's your third. Go at it. That's it.
I'm not sure it would really fit at Atalanta. I think he'd fit in Real Madrid. I think he'd fit as an impact sub. I don't think he'd get anywhere near that starting 11.
I think he would, you know.
No, I don't.
Because I don't think they've worked out the third player in that attack yet properly. I don't think that chemistry's right. I don't think it's right. Because they bring in like Asensio and, you know, Asensio's in and out. Obviously, Isco's fallen off the map. I don't think they've quite got that third player worked out.
I kind of agree, but I don't think he's it.
I mean, I think Jadon Sancho's it, but who am I?
Arsenal should be on the phone being like, do you want Nicola Pepe, 50 million? He's great on the right hand side. I like Nicola Pepe as well, but he's not playing for Arsenal, is he really?
No, he's not.
Great, let's do a couple of quick ones. Joel Hins, will you be watching any of the Winter Olympics? And if so, which events?
The cold ones.
Fucking hell.
Winter Olympics, what do I normally watch?
Curling's my jam, man.
Curling's fun. The ice hockey's always fun. Curling is a vibe. It is a vibe.
Genuinely, the last Winter Olympics, or was it the one before? I think it was the one before, actually, 2014. A couple of friends of mine were like, there's a curling club in like Rochdale or something like that. Should we go and join? We're very near. It was somewhere like Rochdale. It was somewhere nearby. Yeah. And very nearly embarked in a bit of curling in my own time.
Oh, great fun. I mean, one thing I enjoy watching that I could never possibly compete in myself, skiing of any nature, but the ski jump is often fun.
Oh my God, yeah.
I mean,
Germans love a ski jump though as well, don't they? Like there's always like a Saturday or Sunday sports show on one of the main terrestrial channels in Germany. There's always ski jumping. There's just some ski meet going on somewhere in Austria or Germany or Switzerland, and it's always on TV, always.
God.
In fact, if they did like a minutes per genre audit of German TV, I would gamble. I'm not a gambling man, but if I did gamble, I would put some money on ski jumping occupying more time than anything.
Because skiing is such a cool sport to be good at. I've never done any of it, but it would be such a cool thing to be good at, I would have thought.
Oh, bobsleigh, of course. I'm going to watch the bobsleigh. Goodness skeleton. Me. Skeleton is because that just looks fucking terrifying.
Absolutely. Why? Confession. Watching the Winter Olympics, I look and go, wow, these Europeans like really dangerous sports. Like, this is really dangerous stuff.
It's almost like they're doing it Just to feel something.
To feel something. Existential Olympics, not the Winter Olympics.
There you go. The Winter Olympics as a whole thing is existential. It's the most existential sporting gathering in the world.
Absolutely.
All right, one final question and then let's get out of here.
Let's do it.
This could be the end of Stadio, you know.
Oh my goodness. Here we go.
Killian Shields. What's the biggest differing of football opinion between Musa and Ryan? Is there anything major or is it just largely same page harmonic vibes?
Did we come across as largely harmonic? Maybe you cut all the hot takes.
One of the things that's really interesting is that everyone says, oh, a lot of the reviews and stuff say, like, they mention our friendship and they don't realize that, like, Moose and I can't stand each other. We can barely be in the same room.
Sadly. Sorry, Teddy Sheringham and Andy Cole. Don't speak between podcasts.
We actually don't do this live. We actually each record overdubs. We can't be in the same room.
We enter the podcast via different entrances and we leave via different exits.
Yeah.
This is very much a podcast of convenience.
Moose is very much muted on WhatsApp.
Exactly. What?
And Twitter and Instagram.
Can you imagine if we actually
genuinely hated each other? That would be quite funny. No, it wouldn't. What am I talking about? It'd be horrible. No, I like that we're friends. Thanks.
Yeah, the worst thing is people would listen to that. That's probably they'd listen.
No, I don't think they would. I think people actually, if we really fell out.
Oh my goodness, awful.
I think people would be like, guys, what are you doing? No, guys. Don't do it. What are you doing? To be honest, I think that Adama Traore thing is probably as close or as wide as a disagreement as we've had for a while.
We had a disagreement was a few dozen episodes ago about, what was it? It was about a style of play or build up. I can't remember what it was.
We disagree sometimes on tactical stuff, but I think that's completely normal.
We do on tactical stuff. Yeah. Just how about yesterday when we were talking about Xavi and I was really excited. Oh, look at Xavi explaining. You're like, yeah, that's quite basic.
Oh shit, yeah. No, do you know what? I felt really bad about that afterwards. I felt really bad about this. Should we recall that story?
Yeah, when I was really excited.
Or shall we do it? Shall we do it to get it? Yeah. All right. So this is when we were having coffee. Yeah
so we're talking about how Xavi was explaining what, you know, how he liked to supply the different members of that great Barcelona team, and how he was like going, yeah, when I pass to this player, I put top spin on it. When I pass to that player, there's no spin. That guy, this is that. And I was like, wow, that was really impressive. I explained it. Ryan was like, no, that's really basic. you're totally right.
For clarity, it is super impressive. And that's the thing. But I think that, like Moussa was saying, you know, oh, so-and-so, like Iniesta doesn't want any, he doesn't want it in front of him. He wants it to feet, no curl, no spin, no nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This person wants it a little bit in front of them because they want to run onto the ball. And I was just like, yeah, but I said, I think that's, obviously that is impressive, but for a footballer of, a central midfielder of Xavi's level, that is basic. Because
that's calm for him. Yeah.
That is the stuff that, to be a good central midfielder at any level of the game,
yes,
organized football, that is, you have to take these things into consideration. If you don't do that, then that doesn't make you a good central midfielder. Like, we were talking about it. I was saying that there was a guy, I hate hearing the words come out of my mouth when we do it, but even at the level that we played at, right?
Yes.
I was saying that, because I used to play central midfield, and I was just like, there is a guy that I know, if I don't give him the ball, because 9 times out of 10, he's not really in the right position to do it. There's a better option. Even if I don't give him the ball, I have to acknowledge his option.
I
play the ball and I turn around and I'm like, thumbs up kind of thing. Like, sorry. So they've been acknowledged, because if I don't acknowledge them, they're going to get really stroppy and they're actually going to kick off around the hour mark. So that's happening, right? And yeah. I know that for the right back, I have to say, move 5 yards up before I even consider giving them the ball. So I might have the ball in midfield. There might be someone closing me down. And I know that the right back is the option because we've got an overload on the right hand side and our central striker isn't high enough up the pitch yet to be dangerous. So I have to shift the right back 5-10 yards up the pitch, maybe knock the ball 2 yards in front of him to almost give him a trigger to go forward. And then we might actually be able to do it. So for Xavi to be saying like, oh, this person wants this, or Messi wants this, or Wilson wants this, for me, it's kind of like, I should fucking hope so. Because like, he's one of the greatest midfielders of all time. If he did an interview and was just like, do you know what? Like, I never really thought about who was, I was just going to the ball to. I was just like, whatever. It'd be like, you know, watching F1 drivers.
Yes.
They're making alterations on brake balance around on the steering wheel whilst going at like 150 mile an hour around a corner at various points in the lap. And they have to remember all of this stuff. If it came out that actually they didn't have to change gear, it was all automatic and all the settings were bogus and all they did was just put the foot down and brake, I'd be like,
you're saying they're driving off of pure vibes. Driving off of pure vibes. And it's funny because actually after our conversation, I went and had a look at Xavi's because I wanted to look at this for the peak of football, which was the 2011 Champions League final. I actually found the stats of it because I'm obsessed with those stats. And Xavi attempted 148 passes, obviously in 90 minutes, and completed 141.
That is unbelievable.
That is astonishing because that is a constant, calculation.
Do you know what, from that era of, what was that, 2011?
Yeah, 2011. Yeah.
Right. Do you know what that was the peak of, though? Do you know what was it? His absolute peak?
What's that?
The absolutely pointless Barcelona triple 1-2.
Oh, of course.
Do you remember that?
I loved it. Oh my God, yes. The triple 1-2. There's a moment, there's this one they do when they're playing away from home in La Liga in the kind of like this, those mint shirts. Iniesta gives it to like two different players, plays a 1-2, gets it, collects it. And at that point, there's like six Barcelona players almost in a kind of rondo position.
Yeah, yeah.
And the opposition just exhausted. They're just like, what is the point? Yeah. What is the...
But yeah, so and that's why I... For clarity, there is no way in hell I was a remotely particularly good footballer. But like,
he was
I'm saying that I think
business.
That it was, for Xavi...
Yes. That's like,
it's how do I explain it? It's kind of like, it's impressive.
Finish light work.
But this is for one of the greatest midfielders of all time.
Yes.
That's what they're thinking of.
Exactly. It's light work.
The thing that frustrates me about this is that people don't consider this when they critique players like that.
Yes.
Because to me, that should be the norm. That shouldn't be impressive to a load of people. People would be like, thinking about that in that depth, at that level of the game, against that level of opposition, over that amount of time, and still coming out as being one of the greatest midfielders of all time, is unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly.
But people don't talk about it enough. People just like, oh, he couldn't tackle. It's like, no, actually, he could tackle.
Yeah.
I still genuinely think Xavi is an underrated midfielder.
I think so.
And that's how good he was.
Yeah, I agree.
So anyway, to answer your question, Killian, we don't really have that many.
We don't have that many.
And if we do, it's usually very small things.
Yeah. And that's the fun of it as well. That's the fun of football.
Also, that's fine.
Different opinions. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We both agree the anxiety exists and the suffering is necessary.
Yeah, see, I'm not so sold on the suffering is necessary. I think you enjoy it. I'm just like, I just want a fucking quiet life. Should we bounce?
Let's do it.
Thanks to everyone who submitted questions. Sorry we couldn't get through them all. But yeah, we hope everyone's staying safe, well, getting vaccinated if you can, getting the booster if you can. Don't forget to check Wright's House. Don't forget to check theringer.com/soccer. We'll have some more pieces going up soon. Stadio newsletter. Stadio.football, scroll to the bottom. Sign up for our newsletter if you'd like. And Stadio Ultras players on Spotify. Speaking of which, we're playing out on Julie Stapleton, the New York mix of Where's Your Love Gone. Anything else you want to add, Musa Konga?
No, just that I love that tune that you sent through when I heard it. It's so good. What's that, like early 90s?
91, man.
Oh, 91, beautiful. House. Banger.
Sure, yeah, it's nothing you want to pedal? It's been a while.
No. Listen, I'm not pushing any conspiracy theories. I believe in a robust, mature democracy, and I don't want to undermine the rule of law in any way. So no hot takes for now. All good.
Boo. All right, much love, everyone. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll be back on Monday.
See ya.
Taking on responsibilities, I think it's time that we should know what we really need. If the love has gone and you don't want to stay, then hey baby, we can go our separate ways. La 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 la. Ooh. I thought the love we had was oh so hard to break, but
Now I know that it was all give and no take. One-sided lover says it's all no good for me. I'm a woman and I've got my dignity.
La 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 la. Everything was going fine when there was really something deep inside your mind. Let's sit down and maybe we can work it out. There's no need to raise our voices, scream or shout. I've come to terms about the way you really feel. I know the love we have is no longer real. Really had a love so strong. Really had, where did it go wrong? Really had a love so strong. Really had,